Welcome to the Microsoft IT Pro Podcast, a show about Office 365, Azure, and the IT Pro and end user side of life. Each week, we'll discuss a different topic or recent news related to Office 365 and Azure and how it relates to you as an IT Pro. The MS IT Pro Podcast is never longer than 30 minutes, so let's get started. How are you today, Scott?
Oh, man. Yeah. I've been at client sites all week, and you know the thing I'm most excited about today? I don't have to wear pants or dress like an adult. It's a work from home day.
It's a good thing we're not doing video. I don't know if I want to see you without pants.
Yeah. No, it's back to board shorts and flip-flops.
Oh, okay.
Walking on the beach in the morning.
All right. That's okay then. So are you ready for episode 40? We're already up to episode 40.
I know. These things just keep coming.
They do. And we're going to do another news episode, which they also just keep coming. And every news episode, I feel like we have to go through and filter out. And we did this morning, filter out what we're going to talk about because there's just so much news that keeps coming.
Yeah, the current cadence is pretty ridiculous. And it can be a little bit noisy too. So I think as you go through and, you know, we tell people to do things like check your message center, you know, where you might think all that stuff just because it's coming to your tenant, it still might not be directly applicable to you, right? So, oh, there's some new buttons coming to SharePoint libraries, right? Like we're going to add a delete button to every view. Well, cool. You know, you've got to figure out how to message that internally and things like that, but maybe not big bang enough to talk about over here.
Exactly.
Although I just did.
I know. And we could, yeah, we're not going to keep going into other ones. We could give a whole bunch of examples of what we trimmed out, but then we'd end up talking about it and it'd defeat the whole purpose.
There we go. Yeah. So why don't we get into some of this stuff?
All right. So do you want to kick it off today?
Let's start with SharePoint and OneDrive, because I think they seem to just keep, again, cranking along at that phenomenal pace. So you've got some new web parts that are coming to SharePoint Online, specifically the new kind of modern web parts. So pretty basic in the beginning. We had links and, you know, highlighted content and things like that. And then, you know, we had announcements around, you know, things like communication sites, which brought the Hero web part and document library previews and things like that. But that toolbox, right, for authoring and adding those things to a page, it used to be pretty limited and you could really didn't even need to scroll through it, right? There wasn't a lot there. So now they've gotten enough web parts that have been converted over. You're going to start seeing new authoring toolboxes come where you can group web parts by category as you bring them up. So do I want to see everything? Do I want to see just discovery or communication web parts, business intelligence, connectors, things like that? And they have some new interesting ones coming as well. So you're going to have a new file viewer web part. So that kind of piggybacks on some previous announcements where, you know, you have hundreds of file types that you can view within SharePoint Online at this point with native viewers. And now you're going to have the ability to natively embed those on pages. So that'll be things like Excel documents, Word documents, if you want to put a PowerPoint presentation on a page, things like that, all now totally doable. They also updated the people web part. So you are going to have the ability to add custom descriptions underneath people's names and also custom links. And I know they've been doing some work there about, you know, whether that actually works and opens and things like that. And it looks like it's all ready to go. Forms also has a native web part now, which is pretty interesting. So you can do those kind of surveys and polls and results embedded directly on your SharePoint pages and pick up some functionality there. So if you're doing those internal campaigns or you're soliciting feedback from team members, things like that, through your group or team sites, now you have another way to go about it. And then they've also added a couple more simple web parts, so including things like spaces and dividers across the board to make it a little bit easier for folks to really lay out those pages in a more meaningful way, you know, now that we don't have master pages and all that kind of stuff to muck with.
Yeah, it's nice to see them continuing to just expanding that modern UI to the point where I feel like it's getting close where almost everything you could do in the classic UI is is getting to that modern UI now.
It'll get there slowly but surely. And it's definitely been, you know, it's felt like slowly. Now it's starting to feel a little bit more like surely. And the end is in sight for some of this. You know, everything's not there, but that's okay because it's different. And, you know, let's try it out and see what we where we can make a go of it.
Another one they added to the modern UI is they made some improvements now to those list and library preview web parts. So in the classic UI, this is that web part where you could drop it on a page, get your list or library. So you could see your list or library in a page rather than going to the library itself. In the modern UI, previously, it was essentially just a read-only view of that list or library. So you could see everything in it, but you couldn't create new documents. You couldn't upload files. You were missing that whole toolbar experience for the library in the web part. They've started making updates now to those modern view list and library web parts to add that toolbar functionality into those web parts. So you can create new files now, you can upload files. I think they added some more, and may have even been in two different news announcements here where you can delete files. But again, they're continuing to improve that, get that toolbar into that web part. So if you do drop a list or library web part on a modern UI page now, you can actually work with the files in the library instead of just looking at them.
You know, again, it goes back to that that slowly but surely thing. You know, I'm torn on some of that. It was kind of nice to be able to walk into those highly structured situations for team sites and say it is what it is. And your homepage might not be as cluttered, but go over here for a full experience with your documents and your lists, right? They were available in quick launch and ready to go. And that kind of made sense. The concern is users come back now and they just start going back to having those highly cluttered home pages, right? Or custom pages in their sites. And then you're not exactly getting maybe adoption you're looking for in areas with like mobile apps or anything else, because now people are just back to being overwhelmed with the process associated with SharePoint rather than kind of hoping to streamline it along the way.
It's interesting. I definitely can see that point of view where now the differentiation between a document library and a web part on your homepage, there's no difference.
And you're still going to have to go to your document libraries or lists anyway for some of the other integrations that have come out. So Power Apps and things like that. So one that came out and is now released is hybrid self-service site creation. And this is absolutely insane to me that we can tout this as a feature. But hey, Microsoft marketing at its best, right? Now you have officially the ability to redirect your on-premises site creation experience over to Office 365 and SharePoint Online. So we're not talking, you know, I hear hybrid site creation and I'm thinking, oh, you know, it's going to be great. There's going to be a picker and, or there's going to be some business logic driven thing where I can dictate from an administrative or business side where my sites are created, right? On-prem versus SharePoint Online, maybe data residency, security restrictions, whatever it happens to be. But no, it's just a redirect to the site creation page in SharePoint Online. So once you enable this, should your users have access to that create site experience, they'll just be redirected up to all the online stuff. And now all your sites go online.
This is one of those marketing hype ones, right? That Matt was talking about in one of our previous episodes where is it hybrid? Maybe. Kind of.
It's hybrid in the sense that I put a link on the page and it takes me online.
Yeah. If I remember right too, wasn't this one like the only, I'm going to put hybrid in air quotes, feature that was available in 2013, but not 2016 previously. And it finally just came to 2016 now with the November 2017 public update that you need if you want this new hybrid feature.
Yeah, it has been out there. But here we are touting it again because it's news.
So on to some more Flow Power App stuff and some of the new functionality that's come out with that around SharePoint Online. So Microsoft Flow, they now have integrated it into OneDrive for Business and added some new connector actions. So earlier this year, I think it was maybe at the May announcement, may have been Ignite. I can't remember when they preview all of these. But they announced that Flow would be coming to OneDrive, so you could start building flows. You could tie some of those flows right into your OneDrive right from the GUI there. So in your OneDrive, you click add a new flow and start building it. That's there now in OneDrive for Business. So you can do flows on demand for selected files. So one example they gave is, hey, now I have this Word document. I want to convert it to a PDF file and share out the PDF file instead of the Word document. There's some connections there to convert documents to PDF. Now you could do things where you send documents from your OneDrive to your manager for approval. And you can even run flows on a folder. So it gives you a whole lot of flexibility around even your personal files now, what you want to do with them. I haven't played with this yet, but I would imagine you could start building all kinds of flows too to enable you to redirect or move files from your OneDrive out to a SharePoint online team site or something else. So kind of build that business process around documents in your OneDrive like you could already do with files that were available in your SharePoint online document libraries.
Yeah, this I think has a couple impacts, at least operationally or administratively, right? Now that users are going to have access to this feature in a place that's not just SharePoint sites, if you haven't been paying attention to who's been using Flow, what flows are out there, who's licensed for it, things like that, that becomes a little bit more important, especially with the execution model, X number of flows per user per month, things like that. When it starts to maybe cut into your pooled executions, you know, now that users go out and do this stuff. So I think there's some opportunities there for people just to kind of take a step back and say, whoa, what's actually going on in our environment? Because like you said, it's great functionality, but all of a sudden you might see this uptick and wonder where it's coming from. So that's probably it. Because you can't say, hey, I've got just Flow in SharePoint and not Flow in OneDrive now, right? It's just all over the place.
Right.
Another cool one around Flow and Power Apps and all that stuff, and really specifically like Power Apps and SharePoint, is the availability of custom forms. So now we're talking about a custom forms experience within SharePoint Online with forms rendered in Power Apps. So now we're back to, folks remember the SharePoint Designer days, right? We had new form, edit form, and display form, things like that. Now we're back to an experience where we can start to customize those forms within SharePoint once again without needing to use SharePoint Designer. So this works in those modern list views, modern document library views, all those kinds of things. To be able to create that experience inside of Power Apps, keep the users within SharePoint, and then have all those kind of rich display and rules and business validation, anything else we might need along the way. And the Power Apps team has been slowly but surely, again, bringing along features and support for SharePoint field types. So, you know, there's gaps there. But now with this announcement, they also brought multi-value choice and read-only attachment support over to that experience as well. So that's currently rolling out now for first release tenants. And, you know, if anybody wants to play with that, they can certainly go ahead and turn it on.
I have it, my tenant. I started looking at it. I haven't actually tried to build any custom forms yet, but it, at least to be able to launch it, it works pretty slick. You just go in there, click to edit those view edit forms, and it just pops you over to Power BI, Power Apps.
The other
gives
power.
The other power. Gives you that nice form to be able to start editing, tweaking that list. So on my list to play with, but it's nice to see that one actually coming. Another just quick one kind of along the same lines is Power Apps and Flow. They had the integration to modern lists up until now, at least when this was posted. It was still under the preview flag. Microsoft has actually GA'd it now. They've graduated out of preview and are now certified as compliant, are all good to start using in those modern lists and libraries. So that's, again, it's nice. It's out of preview now. So if you have any qualms about using products in preview, Power Apps and Flow in modern lists and library are now out of preview and can be used to your heart's content as long as you're licensed for it.
Excellent. You want to talk about a little bit of a bipolar feature?
A bipolar feature?
Yeah, yeah. So they announced, and this is great that they're bringing this functionality over, idle session timeout support for SharePoint and OneDrive, right? So I think this is something that customers have asked for a long time of go ahead and give me the ability, just like I would in maybe, you know, my consumer banking experience, right? You've been idle on this page for, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 30 minutes, whatever it happens to be. Let's go ahead and sign you out right now, or really just walk you back through the authentication flow and get you ready to go with it. So this is an awesome feature. You can go ahead and turn it on and configure your time. And then what's going to happen, like I said, users are going to be sitting on those pages. They're going to see idle session timeouts pop up. They're going to be presented with a little button right now that just says, hey, you've been signed out. Click continue. Walks them back through the authentication flow. One of the interesting things that they chose to do with this feature is it has a dependency on the keep me signed in checkbox from the authentication flow, right? So effectively, we've got a signal from a user that says, let's go ahead and keep me signed in. Pretty easy. Well, the reason I say this is a little bit of a bipolar feature is the Azure AD team recently changed up the authentication experience a little bit as far as what it looks like from an end user side, right? So in the past where we had a username and a password on a single form, now we're walked through an experience where we put in our username and then we're taken to another form that says enter our password. And then potentially we're taken to even a third form, which says, you know, don't bug me a whole lot on this device. So you have multiple opportunities from an end user side to say, effectively, go ahead and keep me signed in. And I think organizationally, some organizations might even train their users, or they might force it via like a query string into the IDP and kind of do the keep me logged in thing. So one of the issues becomes, say you do configure idle session timeout, but your users use the keep me signed in button. Well, if they use the keep me signed in button, then the idle session timeout doesn't matter because it's not going to work because it looks for saying, hey, do you want to keep me signed in? Hopefully they give everybody a control or a way around that, especially since this feature is gated to SharePoint Online and OneDrive for Business, right? It'd be really nice to say, hey, regardless of what the user said, maybe we have a sensitive workload. So if that workload's a little bit more sensitive in SharePoint Online, we just want to make sure that, you know, we're covered across the board.
Wow. Yeah, that is a little bit of a bipolar feature.
You kind of walk through the documentation for it and you're like, huh, that's cool. And then, you know, there's one note in there and it is in italic, but hey, idle session timeout takes a dependency on this signal. In scenarios where keep me signed in is selected at authentication, the client will not honor the idle session timeout. Thanks. So you gave me an administrative control to force clients to do something, but if clients do another thing, you're going to respect what the client says and not my administrative control. Makes like
no sense.
Absolutely no sense, but hey, whatever. So organizationally, I think there's always been a control, well, for a while now, there's been a control through the admin center where you can go into a user and you can initiate things like signouts, like one-time signouts. You know, maybe you had a user that left the organization or they got hacked and you want to expire their authentication tokens, things like that. So this becomes another security control, right? Organizationally, you know, you might want to think about adopting. Should you have customized, say you did like an IDP initiated short link or something like that, and you're kind of doing like vanity URLs or giving your users easier ways to log in, and maybe you have automated that keep me signed in signal. You know, if you do implement this and you go, huh, it's not working, you might want to look to some other things that happened at client authentication.
All right. So we're already like 20 minutes in, and we haven't even gotten through the SharePoint news yet. So were there any other SharePoint news items you really wanted to talk about, or you want to jump down to some of the new Skype, Exchange, Office 365 as a whole, some of those features?
There's a couple of things in Exchange, or at least one I think is important. Skype and Teams is always good. Yeah, let's do Exchange real quick, at least kind of one new interesting thing that popped up. So within Exchange Online, there's a new feature called Client Access Rules. Well, really specifically client access rules for Exchange Online. So this is going to start coming out imminently. And what this lets you do is control access for clients to your Exchange Online organization hosted up in Office 365 based on some metadata or attributes about that client. So if you think about blocking a client from using a particular protocol, so, you know, I want everybody to use ActiveSync, but not POP or IMAP, things like that. Maybe I want to block specific applications, services. I want to do things like gating by IP address, right? I only want you to be able to sign in to Exchange Online, whether it's on a mobile device or a client PC or Mac or whatever it is. through my corporate network. So let's do some IP gating and things like that. And then even you have options within this feature, which is pretty neat, to require certain types of authentication. So I could say organizationally, I never want to allow basic auth, but I'll allow federated auth or ADFS auth and maybe certificate-based authentication, right? If I'm doing client certs or things like that coming across. So this is managed all via PowerShell. There's nothing in the UI for it yet. And it is specific to Exchange Online. It's not one of those features that's gated within Azure Active Directory. So we're not talking about a conditional access policy there. We're talking about this client access rule over in Exchange Online.
Nice. That'll be interesting. And we were talking a little bit before, and it sounds like this one may not even require any additional licensing like you need right now for conditional access, but you may just be able to do this with an existing, as long as you're on maybe an Exchange plan too or something, you may be able to just have this right out of the box.
Normally they call it out in the documentation for, hey, you're going to need a certain type of, like you said, client license or entitlement to use this feature. And this one has absolutely nothing about that. So it's just straight up, you have Exchange Online. So it's not clear from the documentation whether it's only going to be gated to even like eSKUs, or is this going to be available in small business premium, things like that. Might have to spin up a couple tenants and try it out.
Or if there's somebody out there from the Exchange Online team that knows, that wants to fill us in, let us know. Hit us up on Twitter or something.
That'd be way easier. These demo environments are...
Yeah, I know. We should get someone from the Exchange Online team to come talk to us. So anyways, some Teams updates. So I had a few things for Microsoft Teams that I liked. And kind of as we talked about in past episodes, Teams just keeps going. They keep cranking up more and more stuff with Teams. One nice one for me, I'm a PowerShell guy. I can't remember if we mentioned this or not, but Microsoft Teams now has a module for working with Teams in PowerShell. So it looks like they maybe have, I don't know, 15 or 20 commandlets now for being able to manage your Teams with PowerShell, create team or new team channels, new teams, remove teams, add users to Teams. So there is a post out here that actually has what's new in November for Microsoft Teams from Ann Michaels, who we actually interviewed on the podcast once already. But there's a post that talks about the how to get the modules, how to start using them. I like it. I'm glad they keep coming out with these modules, keep adding them for Teams. Another one, they're starting to add some more reports as well for Teams around user activity, around app usage with some of those third-party apps and tabs. So that's another nice one that's coming to Teams. Again, after that, there's a few small updates. There was one other one around Macs, because I'm a Mac guy. Support for conditional access on Macs. Azure Active Directory, Intune, they're starting to support macOS now for conditional access, for managing some of those access controls of your Office 365 environment, of Teams, from within Intune for macOS. So that's nice to see them start giving macOS some love there.
Yeah, you also have some new data residency things coming into play for Teams, right? So part of this announcement was... There's some upcoming stuff, right? You've got like GDPR and a bunch of other things coming along. But in general, right, data residency is generally something you want to be able to support in your cloud platforms and have options with. So that's coming over to the Teams workload as well. So any customers who are brand new tenancies, like if you just signed up pretty much this month, right, November 1st, you're already going to be local to your geo if you're in the UK or... I think it was Germany, or maybe just the UK is the only one that's up today.
I think it's just the UK today.
They do plan on bringing it to kind of all the geos across the board, I believe is what they mentioned from the announcement. And yeah, new customers, you're going to be in this geo over time. Hopefully either they automatically migrate you like they've done in the past, right? When they brought up the Australian geos, they brought all those tenants out of Hong Kong down to continent to automatically to bring the data down. Maybe they'll have options there too for either bringing people in automatically or letting you choose when to migrate across, things like that. But it's always good to kind of have those warm fuzzies from the administrative and operational side, right? To say we can meet the requirements of the business and be secure and do all those things at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. What other ones? Take another pick.
Another pick.
Pick one of your favorites out of our...
I already did my favorite one, you know, that...
Okay, I'll do one that's kind of, I think is kind of ironic, but it's kind of a cool feature.
Hit me, Alanis.
But it always makes me laugh, is now you can create a flow in Microsoft Flow to manage your flows in Microsoft Flow. So it's kind of like this whole Inception thing going on, where now... I don't know, you create a flow to manage a flow, and you can even create more flows to manage your flows that manage your flows.
So Skynet's real?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so this is the flow management connector, right?
Yeah, so now you have all these actions within flow management. So you can create a flow to create connections. You can create a flow to create a flow. I have not tried recursively creating flows. You can delete flows, you can get flows, you can get flows as an admin, list out connections, list flow run only users. So they created a whole bunch of these actions. There's actually 19 actions in total in this flow management, I guess it's a flow management connector essentially. So go take a look at it. We'll link out to the blog post, but there are definitely... I don't know. I can see some uses for it about why you might want to manage your flows, why you might want to get alerted. I think there's one in there for you can like be alerted when certain flows run. If you want to see if people are adding a bunch of connectors, you could use something like that list connectors. So every week it runs out and gets a list of all your connectors, sends you that list of connectors. So you know if people are connecting to third-party services, creating connections that you maybe don't want them to use. Or even around the create connections, if you want to do some type of an approval process. So if somebody needs a new connection, you send them to a form, they fill out the form, and you could automate that creation of the connection based on an approval and flow. So again, I can see some uses for it, but it just kind of made me laugh when I saw that you can now automate flow management with Flow.
It's been coming for a while, and hopefully there's some more improvements here too, right? Like, I don't think there's an update action in there today, so I can create a flow or I can delete a flow, and then I can get a flow, but I'm kind of missing the you and the crud there. But, you know, if you think, like you said, about being business rules oriented, and maybe you already have another rules engine and you're leveraging something like Flow for execution, so it's your, you know, send out alerts, do that kind of thing mechanism, you've got some really interesting options there now, especially if you've started to leverage that platform or tied it into things like SharePoint, or you're kicking things over from an Azure function or a web job, or you know, whatever it happens to be.
All right, so we're probably close to time. Did you have any other ones you want to highlight?
No, I think that's probably pretty good for today. And then, you know, we'll pick it up again next week.
All right, sounds good. Well, thanks a lot, Scott. Have a great day, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Ben.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening, and have a great day.